Hello and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We'll have a roundup of the weekly news for you. We'll have a feature interview with Serhii Korolyuk, the artistic director of the Pavlochenko Folkloric Ensemble. It will be a discussion of the state of Ukrainian dance and its place in the evolving Ukrainian culture in that genre. More news on culture to follow and some music. But first, as always, the news.
Під синьо-жовтим стягом покоління українців боролися за свободу і незалежність української соборної демократичної держави.
We do not and we will not accept Russia's seizure of the Crimea.
Підтверджує свою повну приверженість безсрочному прекращенню вогню в зв'язку з початком учебного року.
Independence Day. Ukraine celebrated 26 years of independent statehood this week. The Ukrainian parliament declared independence from the USSR on the 24th of August of 1991. On this year's anniversary, a large-scale parade was held in the capital Kyiv to mark the occasion, with the presence of top Ukrainian government officials and foreign dignitaries. The parade included Ukrainian troops from all divisions marching along the central street Khrushchatyk. For the first time, soldiers from 8 NATO countries joined the Ukrainian armed forces in the parade in a strategic display of support. There was also an exhibition of military equipment currently in use and produced in Ukraine, which was located at European Square at one end of the parade route. President Poroshenko spoke during the event, noting that our international partners will understand from this parade that Ukraine is capable of defending itself. Our parade is a signal to the enemy that Ukrainians are ready to keep on defending their independence. He also stated that the 26th year of independence was notable in that Ukraine had set a definite course towards membership of the European Union and membership of NATO. U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis made a visit to Ukraine, confirming U.S. support to the country. At a press conference on August the 24th, he stated that one should have no doubt the United States stands with Ukraine. He also repeated that the United States will not accept Moscow's annexation of the Crimea region. He said that, despite Russia's denials, we know that they are seeking to redraw international borders by force. On supplying Ukraine with lethal defensive weapons, he confirmed that is an issue which Washington is actively reviewing. He justified this by further stating, defensive weapons are not provocative unless you are an aggressor. And clearly, Ukraine is not an aggressor since it is their own territory where the fighting is happening. President Poroshenko, in turn, stated that he was satisfied with the progress on discussions about weapons. The military situation on the front over the last week has been at a stalemate. On August the 20th, pro-Russian forces reportedly attacked residential areas of the village of Zaitseve in Donetsk region. On August the 21st, shelling in the village of Zhovanka in Donetsk region caused fire damage to local properties. According to the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, pro-Russian forces have a scorched earth policy to destroy infrastructure around the city of Mariupol and to set forests and crop fields on fire. Over the last week, one Ukrainian serviceman was killed in action and 18 wounded. Telephone consultations were held with the leaders of the Normandy format on August the 22nd. The Ukrainian president conferred with the president of France, the chancellor of Germany, and the president of Russia. As a result, they expressed their support for the trilateral contact group to announce a ceasefire on the occasion of the beginning of the school year. This would allow the children of eastern Ukraine to be able to attend school. The president's office said that the truce will lead to a sustainable improvement of the security situation to benefit school children and the entire civilian population of the Donbas. A number of ceasefire agreements have been announced since the Russian-backed forces seized parts of the Donbas region in 2014, but none so far have been proven to be sustainable. British media have been noticing Ukraine's progress in making post-Soviet reforms. This week, both The Times and The Independent featured articles commenting on the vanishing statues of Lenin and other communist symbols. Since Ukraine passed a law on decommunization in May 2015, there has been a government-led drive to remove Soviet symbols in Ukraine. According to Ukraine's Institute of National Remembrance, in this period, 1,320 Lenin statues have been taken down, as well as 1,069 other Soviet-era monuments. The renaming of a large number of streets has also been a part of this process.
Well, welcome to our in-depth discussion this week for Ukraine Calling on Hromadske Radio. This week we are celebrating the 26th anniversary of Ukrainian independence. And of course, attention is focused on politics, on the war that's continuing in the East. But the glue, if you want, that has kept us together all these many centuries is culture and a sense of a shared past. And today I'm going to be talking to a man who started off in Ukraine, but has ended up as the artistic director of the Pavlichenko Folklorique Ensemble in Saskatoon. And I'm going to ask him about the state of Ukrainian dance, its place in our culture, in our evolving culture, and his perceptions on where things are generally in Ukraine after a successful tour here with his Pavlichenko Folklorique Ensemble. So, Serhii Korolyuk, the artistic director of Pavlichenko Folklorique Ensemble, welcome to our show.
Hello.
First question. So, what brings you to Ukraine this time around?
Well, this time we are participating in the, I think it's the second, international festival of Ukrainian culture and dance in city of Lviv. Also, we had a PFE as group, nominal or Pavlichenko Folklorique Ensemble, had a tour to Balkan countries. So we visited, we performed at Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia. We also visited Budapest, Hungary.
Impressive. Quick question. Was there interest? Did you attract the audiences that you
wanted?
Yes.
Yes, that was actually, yeah, we were very well received. It's a hot season now and lots of tourists and we had full houses on the...
But these weren't just Ukrainians?
Not at all. Actually, one performance we had at town of Kula, Serbia, that's an area where Ukrainian immigrants are located. Ruski Koros Tur and area, Rusinski, that's Rusene. That were mostly diaspora, Ukrainian diaspora to Serbia. But in Croatia, like Makarska, for example, or Neum in Bosnia, no, that was mostly international tourists, people from all over the Europe.
Okay, before we go on to discuss what you've been up to in Ukraine, let's pause and talk a little bit about the Pavlichenko Folklorique Ensemble. Now, I'm lucky enough to know Saskatoon, where you're from, and Saskatchewan. My first wife was from that province, and I've seen your ensemble perform many times. But tell us and our audience a little bit about this now legendary state-of-the-art Ukrainian Canadian folkloric ensemble. When was it founded?
It actually, that's a very good question, Bohdana. The ensemble was founded 50 years ago, in 1967 to be exact. It was founded by late Lucia Pavlichenko. And this year we celebrate our 50th anniversary. So it's a very special year for us.
Tell me, was she born in Canada or was she one of the newly arrived after World War II?
No, Miss P, or Lucia. She was a kid of immigrants, so her parents both were born in Ukraine, but Lucia and her two sisters, three kids, were born in Canada, Saskatoon.
And how? What's the secret? How has this ensemble managed to keep going and be so successful for half a century?
Lucia was a very passionate person and very artistic, so she attracted lots of dancers, but the main boost and root for it, I would say that was a big Ukrainian community in Canada, especially Western Canada. And Western Canada, I'm talking about Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba, those provinces. Actually, last year we celebrated 125th anniversary of Ukrainian settlement in Canada. 125th anniversary,
that's impressive.
Down east, Ontario, I would say there is the newer generation. That's mostly immigration.
After World War II.
Correct, yeah. So the prairies, Canadian prairies, those three provinces, yeah, Ukrainians been there for what, four generations or so. And it's in Saskatchewan, I believe 14% of population of Saskatchewan identified themselves
origins
as
yeah, Ukrainian.
Correct, yeah.
Tell me, now I know that there were very strong dancing groups in Winnipeg, Rusalka, Shumka, I think, in Edmonton.
In Edmonton, yes.
And certainly in Toronto and elsewhere. What is the state of play now? Are there still as many good dance ensembles in Canada?
There are. And since my time being in Canada...
And you were invited from Ukraine as a professional dancer and choreographer.
Yes, I assisted Pavlichenko in 1992 to organize and manage their tour in Ukraine.
You were trained in Kyiv, actually.
I was actually at that time... the choreographer for an artistic director of dance group under for Bukovina State Song and Dance Company under Philharmonic umbrella of Chernivtsi. Umbrella of Chernivtsi Philharmonic, let's put it this way. So I was balletmeister, like how they call, or dance.
You dance must have director. Been very young.
I was actually, yeah, back then I was, I think, youngest choreographer leading. I was 28 when I took this position. Yeah, that was quite something for in these days, those days in Ukraine. And yeah, and from this appointment, and I also taught the choreography in Ukrainian dance in College of Performing Arts in Chernivtsi as well. So that we met with company, and I also had workshops for them, conducted workshops there. And then Lucia, the artistic director, asked me, said, he would like to come to Canada and expand the repertoire of Pavlichenko.
And I think one of the secrets of the success of this ensemble and others like it is that you already prepared a new generation. You were constantly taking in young cadres, teaching them, and that they could take over in time from those who were too old or got married, left, or whatever.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, usually, you know, that dancers' participation in company, I would say, in average 5-6 years. So, and then, yeah, it's always, you know, rejuvenate and the new people come. But what I was trying to say, Bohdan, that... since my time, see, like it was what 24 years ago, actually, when I came to Canada, I see progress. You ask me how, like, what the stage and how it's is it stuck or it's going or it's growing?
Is it an exercise in conservation or is it something that's evolving?
It's absolutely yes, it's evolving and quite dynamically. For the last, it's almost quarter century, I see progress. But we're talking about staged version of folk dance, right? Where there is, you know, choreographer and artist that design based on a folk steps, stories, etc., regions creates a piece, all right? Yeah. But the folk dance as itself, as we know, you know, folklore, being in Canada, you and especially Ukrainian folklore before as well. People who came, who immigrated from different countries, not just Ukraine, right? They were dancing their dances. They brought their dances with them. They brought their trunks, Baba's trunk. Actually, one composition I called Baba's trunk, when the, you know, the dancers, pioneers bring on stage trunk, and they open the, and taking out pieces and telling the story through the dance about those
Pandora's box pieces. From Ukraine.
Pandora's Baba's trunk, not well, I guess you could tell. But what I'm saying, that folk dance in its form, still there as well, and was there. And I would say dance probably the most convenient form for people to keep their culture, to recognize themselves as Ukrainians, because language is, of course, after, you know, generation after generation is declining. We speak, in the West, we speak English mostly.
Right.
Yeah, and but dance
Yes.
It's a movement. That's something. That's why I think probably lots of young people would like to demonstrate their Ukrainian root through form of dance. That you don't have to speak, but you can just express.
But one of the fascinating things about watching Pavlyuchenko's development over the years and similar groups is that you have not only ethnic Ukrainians dancing for you. It's been a magnet for others living in the area. I mean, one of your products, proteges, a young woman who was not Ukrainian by origin, Lana, ended up dancing with Virsky here in Ukraine.
That's correct. I do have dancers, non-Ukrainian, so to say. Oh, I call them Ukrainian light. Because they, in their souls and spirit, they just love this genre. They love this culture, and they became part of this culture. And I love them, and especially those who, you know, it's not just mama sent kid, you know, to take classes. They really wanted to do it. Yeah,
they weren't forced to do it, like some of us
correct,
in the West.
Correct, yeah. And Lana Cuban, the good example of... She also took jazz, ballet, Ukrainian. Yeah, so she was multitasking, versatile dancer.
And I hear you have one of your students is trying out, is going to be with this Virsky studio. The first male, I think, they've taken from outside the country.
Yes, Markian Duplak. That's another, was one of my lead dancers in the company. Now he's entering Virsky studio.
And Virsky, as everybody knows that's listening, is the best, is the state dance ensemble of Ukraine.
Not just of Ukraine. I think it's the best ensemble of Ukrainian dance in the world.
Yeah, right.
That's a highest level in this genre you can reach. And
but tell me, looking at dance in Ukraine, at Virsky and other regional groups and all that. Again, are they into conservation or are they also expressing a creativity that helps them develop and keep up with the times and attract new audiences from the new generations that are growing up?
I would say it depends.
Or is their mission twofold, to conserve the best and also to develop new things?
I think they started as a preservation. And if you look at the, statements, they are to preserve Ukrainian art of Ukrainian dance. But most of it also depends the vision of choreographers and directors. I would say that the bigger company or whether, they have access to in information, education, or more creative approach, it's definitely moving forward. Some groups, schools, usually smaller towns, because Ukrainian dancing is basically in Canada, in Western Canada, everywhere, from small town to big cities.
And at every wedding.
And every wedding, no questions
pandemic.
Asked. Pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the Kolomeika and Zabava would be, it's a part of Ukrainian-Canadian life big time. So I would say that some groups just trying to preserve, but still they developing in any way, because I see now they present in different regions. I remember when I came to Canada 24 years ago, there was just Poltava and Huzl, for example, two regions, right? West and East, so to say, or Central Ukraine, to be more exact.
Opak and Arkan.
Correct, yes. Now you can see Bukovina, Polisia, Volyn, Podilia, so which shows us the range is expanding. So means they are developing. There is evolution.
Can we imagine a time when, let's say, because we see dances about the Zaporozhian Cossacks going off to battle and etc., are we going to have dances in the future dealing with the ATO, with the Revolution of Dignity, with the Orange Revolution? Or is that something too complex that is maybe for a show, a kind of a musical as opposed to one dance?
Very good point, Bohdan. I think as a genre, as a form of dance, like Hopak, for example, or Zaporozhsi, which in my opinion started from a military training and steps, especially male technique, can tell that those steps are from martial arts. And Hopak, that's a combination of martial arts and
cultural self-expression, if you want.
Right, yeah. But with ATO, will it reflect on a repertoire of groups? I would say yes, and this theme would be probably more and more expanded, but will turn to different form of dance. I'm not sure. We have actually a number. Kozak Vidishai, we dedicated, like even my group, we brought to Ukraine this year, number dedicated to Ukrainian soldiers and their loved ones.
Kozak or departing, a warrior is departing.
Departing Kozak, it's called, yes.
Yeah. Look, tell me quickly, because we're running out of time. Now that we are in the process of creating this political nation of citizens, will we also see Crimean Tatar dances occasionally in the repertoire, or Jewish or Polish or something, because the tradition here has been to, in the Soviet period, to have dances from neighboring republics, a Moldovan dance, a Russian dance, of course, Belarusian. But do we foresee now that in concerts, in the repertoire, say, a quarter or a fifth will be devoted to the national minorities or not?
I would say it would probably, and it should. If you look in Western Ukrainian regions, right, Zakarpattia, Bukovina, right, you'll see influence of Romanian, or Slovakian, or Hungarian, or Polish, Volynian, Polisia style of dancing. And actually, that's what probably makes Ukrainian dance very versatile and very interesting, by interesting from region to region. Same with the South. Yeah, Tatar, Bulgars, Greek. It's a presence of our or Jewish dance. It's a part of Ukrainian culture as a whole. Are we going to see this in diaspora in Canadian groups? I would wait, and I wouldn't say so. But in Ukraine, I think that's the way to do it, and expand this VNOC, so to say, wider.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, to conclude, we started off by saying that you were here to attend this festival in Lviv. And I note that apart from you, your group from Canada, Pavlochenko Folkloric Ensemble, interesting, Folkloric French Ensemble, English, I suppose, Pavlochenko Ukraine, Multicultural Canada,
that's
in
correct.
The title,
mm-hmm.
Deliberate, I suppose.
Then yeah. The philosophy, yes.
Okay, so, but I noticed that there was also a dancing ensemble from Argentina there.
That's correct. Prosvita from Argentina, Chermosh from Minneapolis, United States, Volia Choir from United Kingdom. We had five companies from Canada, Edmonton, Shumka School of Dance, Winnipeg, Trianda, and Supilka, Saskatoon, PFE. Yes, that was actually
amazing. So, your final comments as we mark 26 years of independence, it seems that this one concert in your presence symbolizes that continuing unity of the motherland and
absolutely.
Its children, the diaspora, despite all the trials and tribulations that this country faces.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, absolutely. We're trying to actually, in this way, to show our support and to show for our students in diaspora, dancers, to bring them closer to learn more about country of their ancestors, and most of all to actually be in Ukraine and help Ukraine show our support to Ukraine here at this very time.
And Sergei, on a personal note, do you get a high coming back to Ukraine, attending these festivals, being in the center of things, bringing your young people over and putting them on display before Ukrainians in Ukraine?
Yes, I do. And you know what, Bohdana, when I've seen my dancers after the shows were actually in Lviv.
How many are there?
There are 30. Performing cast this year is 30 dancers. This I took. I have 38, but 30 of them were performing cast this year. And we had shows, as I mentioned before, in Croatia, Bosnia. But in Lviv, when they did first show in Площа Ринок, the Market Square outdoor stage, and I went backstage and I've seen my dancers sweating because it was crazy hot, but also crying. And I said, what's wrong? They were that was a tears of happiness that we performed in Ukraine. First time people came to Ukraine and performed there. So for them, it was very special. And absolutely, it makes me feel that the dance is the great and art, actually culture, as you start this conversation, the culture, the bridge, that's a glue or bridge that keeps that you know, genetic, from generation to generation, glue us together, and we leap through our lives, and we bridge from one heart to another. So that's something that, you know, hard to explain, and nothing will substitute that. So
thank you, Serhiy, for this very nice poetic ending and summary. I've been talking to Serhiy Korolyuk, the artistic director of the Pavlichenko Folkloric Ensemble from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Western Canada. Thank you once again, and I wish you and your ensemble great successes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bodan. Thank you.
In culture, there were many cultural events this week inspired by Independence Day celebrations. A new exhibit at the National Museum of Art called Project Eneid is a tribute to the father of Ukrainian literature, Kotlyarevsky. It features many of Ukraine's outstanding artists over the past century who illustrated Kotlyarevsky's best-known epic poem, like, for example, Narbut, Bazilevich, Levitsky, Kirich, and others. There's a new film premiere. This is including Chervoni, Red, a docudrama set in 1947 about a Ukrainian freedom fighter pitted against the Soviet system. It's based on a novel by Andriy Kokotyucha and was entered in the 2017 Oscar competition. And the respected music website, Karabas, has released a list of the top 100 songs released in Ukraine since independence in 1991. There's a lively ongoing discussion in Kyiv about the choices. So we'll post a link on our website and let you decide for yourself. One of the most powerful songs coming out of Ukraine over the past few years is by Foma, called Hrady Vohnyani. The title translates as Fiery Hail. Hrad is a play on words here. It means hail and is the name of the Soviet-era multiple rocket launch missiles, Grad, that have been bombing eastern Ukraine for over 3 years. The song was performed by Foma in Toronto in spring of 2015, not long after the battle over Donetsk Airport. On the occasion of the 26th anniversary of modern independence, Foma released the video to go with the song. It has black and white images and videos of soldiers who have been on the front, some of whom have been killed. Foma, by the way, is the author of the jingle you hear opening Громадське радіо Ukraine Calling every week.
На світанку тануть, як дим, зорі золоті, золоті, і падають у вікна твої золотих зірок промені. Де стрімких джерел течія, весняних гілок білий цвіт, де лунає пісня моя, а в твоїх очах тане лід. Там, де розривають землю гради вогняні, там, де наче леви б'ються лицарі твої, там, де чорний круг кружляє в полум'ї війни. Хай боронить Бог від смерті воїнів твоїх. Де несе холодна вода до порогів байди човни, де за обрій сонце сіда у зелених травах весни, де в туманах срібну росу п'ють баских коней табуни.
де на перехрестях шляхів кам'яні козацькі хрести. Там, де розривають землю гради вогняні.
And in looking forward, Ukraine Calling will be taking its annual end of summer break next week. We'll be back after Labor Day on September the 8th with a new show for you. Enjoy the last days of summer. And to join our mailing list, please write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. Or just write and let us know what you think. This is Oksana Smerechuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.